Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong profitable impact on your business.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and each week I am honored to share the microphone with the most interesting people. Now, these are people who are business leaders, authors, speakers, but they are people who have wonderful stories to share, and they are excited to freely share their journeys, their business wisdom, their tips, and actionable advice. In short, they are willing to help us shorten our learning curve as we navigate the know, like, and trust economy. In fact, my guests are so compelling and so insightful that this podcast was recently written up on Inc.com as one of the best business podcasts you need to be listening to now, and has been mentioned on Entrepreneur and MSNBC. And our topic today is I've really been looking forward to this. It's the ingredients of greatness. Now, John David Mann and Chef Charles Carroll are the authors of The Recipe, A Story of Loss, Love, and the Ingredients of Greatness. And they join me today to discuss what Robin Sharma calls a little story about big ideas. Read it and be transformed. Now, Chef Charles Carroll is an award-winning chef who travels the world speaking on championship thinking and personal greatness. He is the past president of the World Association of Chef Societies. He's been lauded by 5 U.S. presidents for his work with U.S. troops abroad and is a luminary of the Culinary Olympics held every 4 years in Germany. And he is currently executive chef of Houston's prestigious River Oaks Country Club. He's a neighbor. I'm in Louisiana. He's in Texas. Our other guest, John David Mann, rose to international prominence with the Go-Giver. I'm struggling today. Co-authored with Bob Berg, both of whom have been my guests here before. And that book has sold more than 500,000 copies in 24 languages and has been hailed as one of the most important parables about business and life of our time. It has been praised by the likes of Arianna Huffington, Brian Tracy, and Seth Godin. Chef Charles, this is your show. I can't even talk today. Will join me in the first. No pressure, but it's all on you. I can't even speak. Is here. He's going to join me in the first half of the podcast, and then John David Mann will join us in the second half. Charles, good morning. Welcome to your Partner in Success Radio. I am so excited to have you here today.
Oh, thank you so much, Denise. The pleasure's all mine. Thank you for having me.
Oh, anytime. When John David Mann asked me to do something, I do it. It's really
you and me both.
I know. Listen, you have a terrific story that I don't have time to go into in the intro. So could you tell us a bit about yourself before we start talking about the book and the importance of it?
Well, gosh, you covered so much already. I'm very blessed to have a really lot of fun in my life so far, and I grew up in a country inn in Vermont, in a family-owned business, and went from learned an awful lot from my mom and dad and their discipline, and so that was great. And living on stage, if you will, all the time in front of guests was a great life lesson for me. But then moved on to the Balsams Grand Resort Hotel in Dixville Notch, New Hampshire. It's a 4-star, 4-diamond resort. I'm a graduate from Culinary Institute of America, and then I went back there, and I was there 13 years, and executive chef there, and then a beautiful golf course, country club in Rochester, Oak Hill Country Club, probably one of the most famous golf courses there is, and then last 17 and a half years down here in Houston at River Oaks Country Club. So along the way, had a lot of fun. I'm on my third book now with John, which is a amazing story of itself, and you mentioned Afghanistan was life-changing for me in my life, and been on 8 different culinary Olympic teams, so it's kind of the nutshell of Chef Charles Carroll.
See, I I was reading the PDF that you guys sent over, and I kept saying to myself, we need a four-hour show that we cannot cover all of this. To
well,
be honest.
John's got some stuff there you just can't even imagine in some way. I mean, see, he started a
I
school.
Know.
Who starts schools, you know?
But, I know. It's amazing. To be honest with you, I'm probably going to invite both of you back because there's so much in here that is just, I think, so interesting to my audience. So if you guys don't mind, and I'm going to do this on the radio so you can't say no, but would you come back? Tricky,
of course,
huh?
I'm happy to. Happy to.
Come back in the new year if you would. I would love to have you back. But you have this tremendous interest in food and cooking. And in the green room, we mentioned a chef that we both know and love, Chef John Foles, who is a local chef here in Louisiana. Where did this come from? I mean, the inn in Vermont, I kind of get, but you kind of took it out into the stratosphere. You're not just cooking and being, you know, a chef. You're mentoring, you're coaching, you're writing books. Where is all this coming from?
Well, I think the first seed was planted, I think, was at the Country Inn because I was a gym rat. You know, I was chasing my dad around and just do whatever he did. And I ended up cooking breakfast when I was in third grade for the guests. And so I was just all about, you know, doing whatever dad was doing and learn the discipline of my mom and dad. And you know, I wanted to, there's two things I wanted to be, either a chef or an NBA basketball player. And the 5'9" thing didn't quite work out for me. So I just kept
unless
kept
you
on
can
doing,
jump like a flea.
Exactly. So just kept doing it. And I think the aha moment for me, when I realized, hey, there's something really special here. I think was when I was at the Balsams and they, you know, had a team of 65 employees there and it was an incredibly busy operation. And I became chef there, I think of 25 or 26, 27 years old of that property. And it was right after I came back from the World Culinary Olympics with my first gold medal. And I was coaching and teaching these young people and they just hung on my every word and they were just, and the team that we built there, I mean, any one of those employees would jump in a foxhole with me and fight the battle. I mean, that's just how tight we were. And I was thinking, wow, what a great feeling this is. So it made me work harder and study harder and want to do more for them so I could stay ahead of their learning curve. And so I think that was the aha moment then. And then the exciting thing, Denise, really in my life is I'm so excited right now to be partnering with John on the recipe, one of the most talented you know, writers in our country today. I mean, my story right now is that I just dream big and I just love dreaming big and I have the courage to jump out of bed morning and jump off the cliff to go chase it. And you know, I'm doing things, you know, this month that I wasn't even dreaming about in January. So it's, we're having a lot of fun right now doing a lot of different projects.
It sounds like it. And I mean, I'm going to deviate a bit here from what I thought I was going to ask you because, I mean, you are an entrepreneur. You're not just an employee somewhere. You are very much an entrepreneur. You wake up every morning with this fire in your belly, so to speak, and you want to go forward and serve your audience and create new audiences. So I don't know if you know this or not, but you just hit all the check marks for entrepreneurship.
Oh, well, thank you. You know, we're so excited about the recipe, and one of the things I want to share with you, Denise, is that I had a meeting last week or 10 days ago that, you know, the book is in front of five producers, but one of them, which doesn't really mean anything, but no. One of them is upside down excited about the book. We just clicked on all cylinders, and this person is 100% very, very serious about making this into a movie and for a lot of different reasons. So hopefully when I come back on the show, we'll be talking about the movie. But
excellent.
So,
congratulations.
Yeah, it's so exciting. So and so there's that going on, and we have launches going on. And then I have a podcast. So I'm trying to be like you. You know, we started a month ago, 2 months ago, called the Recipe Podcast, Celebrity Secret to a Successful Life. So we're having a blast with that. And, yeah, I'm just loving life right now.
You're an entrepreneur. I love it. Yeah. So let's go back just a little bit. And I mean, I'm so excited for you guys. I can't even tell you, but let's go back just a little bit. And because I want to know, you mentioned the Culinary Olympics. What made you do that? And that's kind of a big step.
Yeah. My dad was a culinary instructor at the local high school, and he showed us, we competed in a competition once a year in Boston, and 1 year I got a bronze medal in the professional category, so that was a huge deal for me. And Dad showed us a movie about the Culinary Olympics. When I saw that, you know, it's held every 4 years. It could be compared to the Sports Olympics. It's just as grueling for the individuals. They work just as hard, just as many hours training and getting ready for it. And he showed me that, and I thought, my God, that's what I want to do. And then I went to Culinary Institute of America, and I saw the same chefs that were in the movie walking down the hall. You know, they were the culinary instructors. And so I chased them around like a gym rat and begged them to do whatever they were doing. I wanted to do it with them. And then I got on a team shortly after, like right out of college. I got on a team right away. So that was kind of it. And then, once you get something like that in your blood, you either never do it again or you do it a lot more. And I ended up doing it a lot more. So I was on a part of 8 different teams as a competitor and as a coach and an ambassador. And then the final page turn on that one is the honor to be a judge, because there's the last 2 World Culinary Olympics I was judging, and there was only 2 judges from the United States. So it's a pretty big deal.
Wow. And you're quite a young man. I mean, you have done a lot in your life. You're very impressive, I have to say.
Thank you.
Listen, and we mentioned Afghanistan earlier. You took a team to Afghanistan to put on a show, and you cooked in your spare time. So what was that all about? I mean, if you would describe that, I'm fascinated with that whole story.
You know, that's a whole show in itself and more of it. You know, but before I forget, if people go to my website, chefcharlescarroll.com, I have some amazing video footage from Operation Hot. I developed it, I guess it was in 2011 and 2013, I did Operation Hot, honoring our troops from the logos to raising the money, putting a celebrity team together of 20 celebrities, hiring 10 more from Kuwait for AV team, traveled with 30,000 pounds of show gear, and we fed 5,000 troops a Cajun Creole meal, and we gave away 5-ton in gifts from socks to Visine to video players to movies, shooting gloves, you name it, energy drinks, energy bars, and then we fed them a Cajun Creole meal, Yeah, we did 7 shows. In fact, you mentioned John Foltz. John Foltz is the one that made the food for us, and we shipped it on a slow boat into the middle of the war zone. So all of this happened in the middle of the war zone, and it's the most amazing time of my life, and that's how I got connected with the president. Because the first time I went over, Denise, that I realized, it was so emotional, and some of the stuff we saw was just, I worked on this project every day for about 14 months. It's that much work, and while trying to do everything else in your life. And to move a garbage can on the left-hand side of the room to the right-hand side of the room with the military, it takes, 3 weeks and 10 pieces of paper signed. It's hard. But it was so emotional. And the first time we went over, I had troops coming up to me and talking to me about thanking me for the show, because our whole thing was to bring a taste of home to them and to touch their hearts and make a difference in their hearts that way. We want to take them out of the war zone just that one day. And I had some troops coming up to me and thanking me, and they started talking to me about suicide and giving me notes.
Oh my God.
Can you take pictures of us together and then send it to my mom? And when you get back to the States, can you call my mom and my parents and tell her that you saw me and I'm okay and I'm healthy, or, give them some positive news and kinds of things. And then we had other emotional stories about guys in the audience that we had gifts from a school in Baton Rouge that works with children with severe disabilities. And so we sent out these, I'll say crosses to you, but spiritual pieces, we call them over there, and that were blessed by the bishop in Baton Rouge, and we gave those out as gifts, and I can't remember how many, but it was a lot. I want to say it was about 3,000 of them, and there in there was a note about these children, and I'll be darned if 3 of the soldiers went back to their barracks and read that, unpacked their bags of all their gifts, and they read the notes in there, and immediately sent emails back to my website that were so emotional that I can't even begin to tell you. and because they had their quote unquote little man had the same disease, and that was, you know, this us being there made the world the difference to them, and so on and so on. So it was an amazing time in my life. You know, we did it twice, and I, you know, people thank me, but you know, nobody needs to thank me. I mean, it was just a life changing events for me just to be there and be able to give out a bunch of hugs.
That is an amazing story. I admit I put you on mute because I was sniffing. I still am a little bit. So all of these experiences, it sounds to me like you poured all of these life experiences into your book, and I definitely want to talk about this book.
Yeah, that's the truth. I mean, and John David Mann, I mean, you know, like I've already said it, you know, one of the most talented writers in the country today, and you know, what a story that is. I mean, if I can encourage all your listeners to do one thing today, to get one thing from listening to us today, I would say, you know, dare to dream, you know, push yourself and dare to dream. And a lot of people dream and don't take action on it. And a lot of people never dream and never find that thing inside them that, you know, that they're meant to put on this earth to do. And I'm just, you know, I count my lucky stars every day that, you know, that I'm just so excited that I have 10 of these things a year, you know, and it drives my wife crazy, but you know, I'm just loving life right now. And John, you know, I don't know, it was 8 years ago. I read John's book, The Go-Giver, the amazing book with Ian Bob Berg, and I loved it. And I was at home, drinking a cup of coffee. And if John wasn't going to be on the show, I would say that he pinged me on Facebook and begged me to be a part of this book. But seeing as how he's going to be on the show, I got to tell the truth. I pinged him on Facebook and he responded. And I almost fell off the chair. And so we struck up a conversation. And I said, I have two other books. You know, would you take a look at them for me? And that's Leadership Lessons from a Chef, Finding Time to Be Great, and then Tasting Success. And those are being used in over 70 schools now all around the country and parts of the world. And so he did. And I said, hey, I got an idea, you know, for a third book. And would you take a look at that? And, you know, he'll tell you, you know, if he had a penny for every time someone said that to him, you know, because he's highly sought after. But
oh, yeah.
Come to find out, yeah, John is a foodie, you know, and so there it began. And that was 7 years ago. And it's taken us this long just to line up our stars and our schedules. But I knew that he was the guy, you know, he's the, you know, I had the story in black and white, and John is, you know, puts it in color and 3D and widescreen, and, you know, yeah, I mean, he's amazing. So, my first two books were, you know, in hospitality schools and team building, and they're, I'm so proud of them. But I wanted to write a book that poured out from the heart, that would have an impact on the reader, that you would see in every bookstore and in every airport when you're traveling. I wrote it to become a movie. So I'm proud to say that, you know, these dreams, eventually you keep pounding, you know, they come true. And we're so proud. I don't know what John will tell you, but I think the thing that I'm so proud of is our launch team of about 200 people. We've heard dozens of times two different comments. One, that the book had such an effect on them that they just kept thinking about it 2 or 3 weeks after. And two, the food and the life lessons were so compelling, and they could almost smell the food. It's so real in the book that they were just taken with that. And food is such a great, you know, metaphor. You know, I mean, it's such, you know, it can be easily tied with life. You know, so yeah, we're having fun.
It sounds like it. Now, I have to ask you, because this is a common thing that I hear all the time from clients and from people that I'm coaching and mentoring. Oh, I'm just too busy. I'm just too busy. I'm not hearing that excuse in your lexicon.
All right. Well, you know, I guess I have a lot of answers for that, and I hear a lot of people, how do you do it, and how, you know, how do you find time for it? And I'm not sure that I do it well all the time, and the, you know, the kids have taken a back seat, you know, in the family, and I'm not proud of that at all the time, but I do work on my days off, and my real job is, you know, sometimes can be 12 or 14-hour days, not all the time, you know, I try to take Sundays off as much as possible, and Mondays the clubs is closed. So Sunday's a family day, and Monday I work at home all day. And then the other thing is, you know, you surround yourself with great people. My dad has always said, don't be afraid to hire somebody more talented than you are. And I have a team of 75 amazing people here at the club. But I think that, Denise, I think the bigger thing is, you know, when people say, how do you do it? It's not necessarily the hours in the day. It's the part about giving up. And I don't want to be a cliche or anything, but, you know, failure is not an option, all these kind of things. And I don't even think that failure, what I've learned actually probably more this year, the epiphany that's happened with me this year is it's not a failure at all. I mean, I'm doing like the podcast we get up off the ground, the recipe podcast. I'm writing a children's book right now with my daughter. You know, we're just having a blast doing it. I got 3-4 other projects. But the thing is when you start your dream, when you start this thing, it could be all the way over on the left-hand side as like a number one. And then 4, 5, 6, 8, 10 months later, it could be all the way over on the right-hand side and it's a level 10 or 11. It looks totally different from when you started. So some people would say, you know, at level 2 or 3 that it was a failure and you had to start over or something. It's not a failure. It's that you ran into this particular wall that says, you know, it's probably not going to work that way. So you got to take a little bit of a left or a little bit of a right turn, and it's not going to look like your original dream, but you got to take that turn if you want it to be successful. So you have to be okay with the process. You have to be okay with the journey and have fun with the journey. They're not defeats. They're not failures. They're just, if you keep pounding and keep knocking on the door, it's just these signs and signals are that you got to take those turns in order for it to be successful. So that would be my, and I know it to, as sure as I'm sitting here today, you know, if you have fun with that, you'll be successful. I mean, we're working on a TV show. What do I know about TV shows? Nothing. I know zero about TV shows. But 80 meetings later, I got a good idea about some TV shows, and we have a place to start, and we have a storyboard, and I'm talking to people in L.A. You know, and I didn't in any of those 80 meetings, I never had a bad one. You know, were some of them negative, or someone telling you shouldn't do this or that? Yeah, sure, but that's exciting because they're, you know, we're finding that path. So, sorry to go off on a tangent there, but I get excited about it. You know, it's fun.
No, that's exactly what I wanted you to do, because people, I think so many people, they have these great ideas and then they hit that first bump in the road, or I call it a rock that you tripped over. And instead of blowing the rock up, digging under it, going around it, or just ignoring it and doing something slightly different, they tend to give up. And I think that's a terrible thing. I really do.
Yeah,
I believe that if you have a project in mind and it kind of sucks, you're going to figure that out pretty quickly. But if it just keeps revisiting you in your sleep, it's time to do something about it.
Right.
So, okay. So one of the things, and thank you for that, because I mean, I completely understand everything that you just said. So the subtitle of the book is Loss, Love, and the Ingredients of Greatness. And for those in the audience who are following around, this is a parable. So it's a great, I mean, I've read the previews on it and I can't wait. I've actually just pre-ordered it. I can't wait to get it. But can you give us a quick sense of what the book is about?
Sure. It's about a little boy who loses his dad at a very young age, and he's mad at the world, mad at God, and he starts to spiral into this bad place and gets himself in a bunch of trouble. And this crusty old military chef that's retired sees the boy getting in trouble, and he reaches out and pulls him in and starts working with the boy. And each chapter is a life lesson, and each chapter they cook something. So usually when I say that, light bulbs go off. I mean, cooking is so passionate, and the respect for food and having patience and planting a seed and watching it grow and careful watering and fertilizing and nurturing and harvesting and, you know, all of the above. And there's just so many lessons in food that can relate to life. And it's a beautiful story. It'll take you on an emotional roller coaster ride, and it's perfectly written to become a movie. And we're proud. We're so proud of it. The chef is wonderful, full of knowledge, that kind of sits back and lets the boy be the boy, lets the boy make his own decisions. But he's constant hands on the shoulder. For instance, it's a great kind of comparison to Afghanistan, really, that one of the first scenes in the book is the boy is sitting at the diner, kind of my dad owned a diner, in Vermont. The scene is taken in New England. I grew up in New England. So there's a lot of, truisms in the book that are about me or things that I've seen or been a part of. It's not a true story, but it's about a lot of things I know about or have seen about. And it talks about the White House. It talks about presidents. It talks about, donating time and those kind of things. So they're sitting in the diner. The boy's upset. He's mad at the world. He's sitting there. He doesn't want to be there. And the chef brings out a hot dog, and he tells the boy to taste it. And the boy chews the hot dog, and he's still mad. He doesn't want to be there. And then the chef says, well, what's it taste like? And the boy's like, he's upset. He said, what do you mean? It tastes like a hot dog, for crying out loud. He said, no, what does it really taste like? And the boy kind of thinks about it for a second, and he just starts describing it. And then he starts having these food memories. And the food memories of being in the ballpark with his dad and smelling the hot dogs and hearing the crack of the bat and being with his dad's arms around him. So for that one moment, that 5 or 10 minute time they're sitting at the counter, the chef has creatively lifted the pain off the boy's shoulders. He's taken that pain away and has allowed this boy to go on this great food memory, this great memory of his dad. And so he's carefully taken the pain away. So that's kind of the style of how this book is written. And it's John's brilliant. He's amazing. So everybody has to go buy the book.
I agree.
That's all I'm going to tell you about it. No, I'm just kidding.
Okay, now it's a must to know anymore. You have to buy the book. But it doesn't sound to me like this is really autobiography. I mean, your dad is still living. You've got a very happy home life, from what I can understand. So where did this book come from?
Well, it came from the heart. I had 8 or 9 chapters that I sent John. And of course, the two books are not even close to being anywhere. That was our building blocks. But I mean, like I said, it was, there's a lot of things in there that I experienced. Like I mentioned already, the Afghanistan thing we related to a national disaster, it's kind of the same thing. And there's talk about Olympic medals, and those are very vivid, and the different competitions, those are very vivid because of the ones I've already been to. Visiting the White House, I've, been blessed to have done that a few times. The diner, my dad owned a diner, and it was called Mapletown Dinette. Well, John creatively preserved that name and calls it, Maple Town is where the scene is in New England. My dad was a chef instructor, a teacher at the St. Johnsbury Academy, the high school there. Well, the boy's dad, Owen's dad, was a teacher at the school. So there's a lot of comparisons, and we just built this beautiful story around those things.
Honestly, I can't wait to read it. I've read The Go-Giver and The Go-Givers, I think, so more. I never can quite remember the title of that one, but, Bob Berg is a friend of mine. John David Mann is somebody I deeply admire as a writer. I can't wait to get my hands on this. So very quickly, I see that John just joined us. John, hello.
Hello, good morning.
Hi. Listen, before we go, Chef Charles, what's next for you, and where can people find you on the web? And if you can, stick around, just in case we need you, would you be able to do that? Thank you.
Sure. I don't want John telling you any stories that no, I'm just kidding. No,
you're warned.
I The place to find me is chefcharlescarroll.com, Chef Charles Carroll, C-A-R-R-O-L-L. You can find just about everything there and all the Afghanistan stuff there we talked about. Also, the podcast. We love for your listeners to go there as well. It's a lot about everything we're talking about now. It's about inspiration and helping the younger entrepreneurs have the faith to make that jump. And that's called The Recipe Podcast with Chef Charles Carroll. Celebrity Secret to a Successful Life. And what's next for me is I got to cook for John. I mean, this guy can eat like crazy. So I got to cook for him, and we're working on this book real hard, The Recipe. The movie thing is exciting. I hope that's what's going to keep John and I busy. Hopefully over the next year, we'll see. We'll wait and see what happens with that. And the children's book with my daughter. I mean, we're just rocking and rolling.
Excellent. Well, just so everybody knows, this is gumbo season. So we're talking about food, and I'm getting ready to do my first gumbo of the season. Chef Charles, it has been delightful meeting you. So hang on. Don't go anywhere. And John David Mann, welcome. I'm so excited to speak with you again.
Yes, I know. It feels like it's been ages, and it has, but it's good to be
here. It has. Yeah, it's been a while. You've been on a couple of times, I think, once with Bob Berg, and I think once by yourself. But this is really a treat for me. So if you were listening to us earlier, your ears must have been just burning because you got some great reviews from your writing partner there. He has a great deal of respect for you, as do I. So you're known for writing about business, and especially the Gold Giver books, which we spoke about, but how in the world did you kind of go off into a story about cooking? Because from what I'm hearing from Chef Charles, this is a fascinating story.
Well, I confess I was not on earlier. I carefully kept myself off the line because I wanted to be. It was on purpose.
We're hurt.
I wanted to be in a place of complete ignorance. Beginner's mind, Denise. Beginner's mind. So I have no idea what he said, but it was all lies, all lies. The respect cuts both ways. I'll just start there. Writing a book, I've written a lot of books with a lot of different people, and you know Bob Berg. The choice of a writing partner is just like the choice of a business partner. In fact, it is the choice of a business partner, because when you're a writer, and a lot of people don't realize this, when you write a book, you're really launching a business. You know, whether you're self-published or whether you're published through New York City through a big publisher, it is ultimately your business. The publisher is not going to market the book for you. You're the one. This is your entrepreneurial venture. And so for me, the choice of a co-writer, of a co-author, isn't a casual one. My Navy SEAL sniper friend, Brandon Webb, who is one of my other writing partners that I've worked with a lot, he says that he's now a multi-million dollar entrepreneur, and he often talks about this, that the choice of a business partner may be the single most important business decision you'll ever make. And people make it way too casually. Like, let's get in business together. Yeah, sure. No, it's like getting married. It is getting married. I mean, just with some of the dimensions missing. So if I had a dime for every time someone came up to me and said, hey, I got a great idea for a story, you want to write it with me? I would be very, very wealthy. 9 years ago, this person I didn't know from a post contacted me through social media and said, hey, I'm a chef. I love your book, The Go-Giver, and I'm using it with my staff and at the country club where I'm executive chef. And I instantly thought, well, that's cool. That's fascinating. The Go-Giver is being used in a food program at a highly rated country club. Very cool. And Charles had me out there to give a little talk in the Go-Giver, and he told me about this idea he had for a story. And he said, I got this idea for a story. I'd love to do it together. And there wasn't even a microsecond where I thought, yeah, sure, or like, no way. The instant he told me the idea for the story, I was in. I was hooked. It's like I fell in love with the idea. And it's funny. Why? So back to your question, like, what was it that got me in this project? Part of it was the idea of food and personal growth. I mean, I didn't think it had been done. I hadn't seen it done. And I'd been involved with, you know, personal growth and leadership and the development of leadership in a lot of different contexts, but I hadn't seen it with food. And I love food. Charles is not kidding. I love eating. I love food. I love cooking. My wife and I, you know, some of our most fun times together is in the kitchen. We cook together a lot. We even shop together. I am a guy, Denise, who never thought I would stand up and say, I love to shop, but because I hate shopping.
I shop online. I can't stand it.
When we go out, when she says, hey, listen, she comes downstairs to my office and says, hey, listen, I'm going to run to the store. I go, oh, I'll drop what I'm doing and come with you because we have such a blast together. I mean, she and I have such a extraordinary relationship. She's my favorite person in the world. But we love food together. It's one of the things we have in common. So I thought that was cool. I also loved the idea of the story, okay? And I'm not sure how much Charles has – I'm sure he's told the story of the story. But this young boy who's lost his way, who's torn up inside, who's lost his dad, loss – you know, the subtitle of the book is A Story of Loss, Love, and the Ingredients of Greatness. I knew it was going to be about ingredients of greatness from the start because that's what Chef Charles is all about. That's what I'm all about. It's like where our two career paths really intersect. We're both lifelong students of the elements of greatness, the ingredients of greatness. And I thought that would, you know, I knew we'd be writing about that. But this idea of loss, you know, that's a lot more personal. And it's something that I've experienced in my life in tragic ways and difficult ways. And it's something that I've thought a lot about. Particularly in my wizened later years, my golden age here, in my over 50 years, because everybody experiences loss, and how you use that, how you not just deal with it, and you know, like in air quotes, get over it, because I think you never get over the kind of loss Owen has in the book. And for that matter, the kind of loss the chef has. He has a loss, too, which you'll discover as you read along. There are a number of different big losses in the story. And how you deal with a big life loss like that, I mean, it can make you a bitter person. It can break you. It can make you a smaller person. Or you can be like a willow tree and bend with it. And it can, I believe you can use it to make you a deeper and richer person. And that's, you know, that's to me one of the most fascinating things about the human condition is how we deal with loss. And I guess, you know, all that kind of flashed by in the moment. Chef said, hey, got this idea for a story. And I was hooked. And here we are 8 years later with a book.
So what I'm hearing, to boil it down, is that two stars collided.
That was a lot of boiling down.
Yeah, was it? I have a logical linear mind. Just so
I gave you more than a paragraph to start with. Well, I'll tell you this: two personalities and two sort of sets of passions certainly collided. I mean, you know, to call Chef Charles a chef is sort of like calling Michael Jordan, you know, a ball player. It doesn't quite, you know, it doesn't quite measure the man. As you know, he's got an appetite for the impossible, you know, for mounting these impossible tasks and not only making them happen, but making them happen in a way that leaves the world a better place, you know, that has a positive impact on a lot of people's lives. And I mean, I am all about that. That's so, yeah, I don't know about two stars collide, but for sure, kindred spirits definitely
there
collided.
There you go. Right. Well, we talked about, yeah, you know, very early on in the show, we were kind of going over everything he's done and everything that he continues to do. And I said, you know, I don't know if you know this or not, but you took off all of the check marks for an entrepreneur. You're not just a chef. You're not just this, that, or the other. You are truly an entrepreneur. So if he didn't know it, he does now, is what I was saying. But one of the things that the chef character says in the book, and I'm reading some of the notes that y'all sent me. I have pre-ordered the book. I cannot wait to get my hands on it. But one of the things the chef character says is, quote, everything you cook reveals everything you are. I have to know, what does that mean?
Yeah, it's, I mean, and the boy is kind of struck with that too. Like, what's that about? Because, you know, the very first thing he does in the book is, or the first thing he cooks a couple of over easy eggs. And he thinks he did a pretty decent job. It so happens that that morning he's ticked off. He's pissed at his friends. He's angry because they're making fun of him, and he's missed his hockey practice or his whatever, his ice hockey practice. And he's just in a bad mood in all kinds of ways. And cooks these eggs, and the chef takes one look, barely even a look, just takes the plate, puts it to the back of the counter, and cooks the order over again, doesn't serve it. And the kid is like, what was that about? I mean, you're not going to serve them? And so in the conversation that happens, basically the chef says, you're angry. You're cooking angry. When you cook angry, your food's going to be angry. The person who eats it's going to be angry. And, you know, what we're driving at is that there's the container, there's the content, and then there's the soul or the spirit in it. I'll give you an example. When I was a kid, I played the cello in an ensemble. We were playing a quintet, Brahms piano quintet, F minor. Magnificent, gorgeous piece. I was the cellist in the quartet. Our first violinist was a kid from Hungary, just had emigrated, and he was a prodigy, brilliant violinist. He could play anything you throw at him, dazzling. He'd play a passage from the Brahms, and it would be like listening to a wooden post. Nothing there. His fingers could do anything, but you didn't care. And he was a sweet kid. He had a good heart, but his heart didn't reach out to his fingertips.
Gotcha.
That's the problem. He wasn't feeling the music, and so neither was the hearer. There's this beautiful Buddhist expression, which is how you do anything is how you do everything. And the chef even quotes it in the book. And I've thought a lot about that over the years, because I think, you know, in a business, how you're greeted on the phone, how you're greeted at the door, when you first sit down at the table, how the table looks, how the server greets you the moment you come in. These little things, they may be little, but they just speak volumes. You make up your mind about the nature of the business before you've even sampled the product, based on how you're treated.
That
you know,
is
I get
so true.
Notice
these things in the
Isn't
aggregate.
It?
And by the time the waiter gets there, you're either ready to say, hi, how are you doing? Or, you know what, I think we're going to go somewhere else.
The president of Southwest Airlines told me the funniest story years ago, the president emeritus, Colleen Barrett. She said there was this guy who was applying for an executive position in the company down in Dallas. He lived somewhere, I think, in the Northwest or somewhere. So he had to fly across country to get to the headquarters. And, of course, he flew Southwest. So he got on the plane wherever his hometown was. And unbeknownst to him, the flight attendants were communicating with Dallas all along the way about how he treated them. And he treated them pretty badly. He was kind of rude, kind of dismissive, a little bit demanding, kind of, you know, your classic pain in the neck, entitled first-class traveler. By the time he got to the Dallas headquarters, he'd already lost the job, and he hadn't even walked in the door.
Oh, my gosh.
He earned it. Yeah. There's a character in the book who does just the opposite. He earns his job before he's even applied for it, which you'll read about. It's the positive version of that story.
So I have so many questions. In fact, and I'll go back to Chef Charles, at the very beginning, you know, I said, look, I've got so many questions about this book. I mean, you guys sent me this enormous PDF that had me going, oh, my gosh, oh, my gosh, oh, my gosh. I'm actually going to have you guys, I'm asking you guys to come back in the new year and talk about this again, because we're not going to be able to cover it at all. So, because I'm doing,
I promise.
No. I really would love for you guys to come back, either both of you or, you know, each of you individually, because I think this book is so important and the story that you're telling is so important. I mean, you're covering love, loss, entrepreneurship. I really would like you to come back maybe January, February, if you would. And because you're on the radio, you have to say yes. I mean, just so you know.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely a date.
Okay, good. So, yeah, good. We'll get you down. But one of the things, and this is a big question for me, because I love to cook, and I'm a natural cook, fortunately. I don't use a recipe book. I may grab one and use it just for ideas, but I've always cooked by the seat of my jeans, so to speak. And what you just said about angry food, angry cooking, you are absolutely right. I mean, if I was mad at my former husband, which I was a lot there towards the end, the food was edible. I've never served up a bad meal, but it wasn't great. And I could tell, he could tell by the way I was cooking what I was thinking.
Yeah.
And I didn't burn anything, but it was close. You know?
It's true because
I had to eat
it, too. By the way.
Really?
Yeah, it's true about writing, too. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Spencer Johnson, who was the author of Who Moved My Cheese, told me this wonderful story about a writer he knew who had written some mega huge bestsellers. And he was working on a new book under contract, and he was talking with Spencer on the phone one day and said, listen, Spencer, I got to go. I got to get back to that. I won't say the word in the radio, but I got to get back to that blank, blank, blank manuscript. And Spencer hung up the phone and turned to his wife and said, that book is never going to sell. He knew it then. And it was true. The book just landed like a stone with no ripples. And because the guy was, he was angry at the book. He didn't want to write the book. And it showed. If I'll tell you this, Denise, when I'm writing something, if it doesn't make me cry, it's not going to make you cry. If it doesn't make me laugh, it's not going to make you laugh. I promise you, you'll cry when you read this book. You might even
laugh
once or twice.
I believe you.
But it's only because it's in there.
I believe it.
Yeah.
You
cook what you are.
Okay, so how long did it take to write this book? I mean, I know Chef Charles had it kind of written out, and according to him, it's not the same book he offered up, which is, you know, probably a great, great thing. But how long, once you guys decided to do this, once you both got on board, and it sounds to me like that happened very quickly, what were kind of the steps that you took?
For me, a book like this, and when I say like this, I mean like The Go-Giver, like this, like some other parables that I'm working on now, where it's a parable. It isn't a book about, you know, SEAL snipers, where there's a huge amount of technical information that you have to cram in. A story like this is like an iceberg. Under the surface, there's the sort of preparation for it, which is, you know, it's me getting to know Charles, reading his other books, learning what he, you know, is, what he does, going out to hear him give a talk, and just us having a relationship, a friendship, an association, and there's a lot of thought and, you know, planning, and I'm an outliner, although my outlines are always very, very fuzzy because you learn so much while you're in the middle of writing and it all changes. The actual writing part doesn't take long. I think it was like to get the first draft done was maybe 2 months, 3 months, something like that. You know, a lot of revision afterwards. But years of preparation beforehand. So that's, you know, it's like years to create an overnight manuscript.
Right. Because, you know, I'm a voracious reader. I have books everywhere. I have wall-to-wall bookcases in my garage of all places because when I bought my new home, it's an open concept home. I don't have that many walls. So these giant bookcases that I used to have ranging on one wall had to go in the garage. And my former husband said, we're moving these. I said, oh, yeah, we're moving those. And it took multiple grunting men to move these things, and I put my books in the garage. They're in armoires. They're in my office. They're everywhere. And honestly, talking with you guys, I have to admit, it never really occurred to me, and shame on me, just what goes into the book process itself. I mean, do you have to love it? Yes, you just answered that. You know, what is the outline? I mean, there's an awful lot. These things don't just kind of pop, these words don't pop onto the page and you go, ooh, great book, thumbs up. So that's kind of what I wanted to chat with you about, John, because, I mean, this is something you do that you love and you're passionate about.
You know, The Go-Giver, because you're familiar with The Go-Giver, and it's a similar book. It's even shorter. So The Go-Giver, Bob and I had a manuscript 6 weeks after I hit the first key. We wrote that puppy fast. We took it to New York. It was rejected over 12 times. And you know what? They were right, those guys. If one of those 12 publishers had said yes, you wouldn't know about the book, because it would never have gone very far because it wasn't ready. We spent 9 more months revising it. And then you know, of course, took it back eventually. It got published, and it's been years and years of promoting it and marketing it. But yeah, it was a quick write. But Bob and I have both spent, I would say, you know, 20 years gathering material that eventually
right.
into that little book. And it's the same with this, you know, decades in the book.
Oh, I can see that. And you just said something very important. I think a lot of people miss, because the big publishing houses, even if you can get a publishing house to pick up your book, that's a couple of years in the making. Then anymore, they simply don't have the budgets to promote you and give you a platform. You have to build that platform yourself. But what you said just now that caught my attention so profoundly is that you're still marketing that book. It's not a new book. It's been around for a while, but you're still marketing it. And that's important, because there's always a new audience. Always.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of people don't
yes.
put that on their planning list. Okay, market the book for the next 20 years.
You know, here's an interesting thing. The Gold Giver was just awarded an Evergreen Prize. It's 10 years old. Just awarded a new prize,
right.
the Living Now Book Awards Evergreen, for its positive contribution to global change. 10 years later. The reason it won that award was because the publisher submitted it. Otherwise, it wouldn't have won.
Oh,
it.
Nice.
The moral being, you've got to ask. You've got to submit. You know, Chef Charles got 5 U.S. presidents to all record live video. I mean, they recorded video messages for his troops. How did he get that? I mean, how on earth do you get 5 presidents to put aside what they're doing, because they're all busy, obviously, to make a video for you, for your project? Well, you ask. you have a lot of nerve, and you ask.
Well, that's how I met Bob Burke and Larry Wingate. I mean, I wanted them on my podcast. I reached out on Facebook, and my attitude has always been, you're going to get one of 3 answers. Yes, no, or they're going to ignore you, which is an answer of itself.
Yes.
I didn't get ignored. I always ask. I mean, yes, no, let's think about it. But, you know, you're right. You have to ask. It's so important.
Charles calls it chewing off the end of the table, that attitude. Yeah.
I'm writing that down.
While you write that down, I'm going to write down, what was it, a dozen grunting moving men. That was great. I didn't remember that one.
I had to buy pizza and beer. It was terrible. I was not leaving that house without those bookcases. That was all there was to it. Okay, so I got them. I could take pictures of them. You ought to see it. And, you know, I go out and I dust off the books. And, yeah, they're getting a little bit moldy and old, but some of them were to start with, so it's not terrible. But I try to keep
good
it as clean
you.
As I can out there. Books are important. I can't throw them away. I'll give them away, but I can't throw them away. Okay, so one of the things that I think is so, so important, and you both have referenced this kind of obliquely, haven't actually said it, but I believe that the kitchen is the heart of the home. And it sounds to me like both of you do as well. Can you both kind of comment on that?
Oh, I think I should turn that one over to Charles. Yeah, go, man.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, John and I joke that, you know, there's a lot of noble professions out there, you know, but, you know, how many parties have you had at your house, and everybody ends up in the kitchen with a glass of wine watching you as you finish your dish or getting ready for dinner? I mean, it is the heart of the... And that's how we've designed our houses, you know, over the years is we start with the kitchen first. And you know, electricians and plumbers, and they're all notable professions, and they do well, and they make good money. But, you know, a plumber doesn't say, hey, you want to come over this weekend, let's fix a pipe. You know, they don't do that. But come over this weekend and let's have some dinner, or have a little reception, and you do that all the time. Food is so special. So I agree with you 100%. And I think it's a thing. It goes with you know, the value of your home too. So, you know, start with your kitchen and the design of the kitchen. That's where you spend the most time.
Absolutely, John. What do you say?
When you watch those remodeling shows that are so popular these last years, you only see that how the attention they spend in the kitchen is
your
really
kitchen.
Fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because it's. I mean, there's what's more primal than eating? I mean, eating nourishment is so, on a physiological level, it's so primal. To a baby, it's so primal. The suck instinct is the first. I mean, it's just physically such a primal thing. As you grow and you mature and you become an adult, that translates still into this it's this primal place in our culture, in our society, and I, you know, it's no accident. You know, you there's a point in the book where the chef talks to his Owen the boy about a thing he'd done decades ago when there was a big flood that ravaged the Midwest, and he says that when there's a disaster, the chefs are the first people they call, or some of the first people they call. And we wrote this little sort of vignette about how the chef had gone to help out the first responders and the rescuers and some of the rescued. And, you know, sitting here looking at the book, and then Hurricane Harvey happened in Houston, and lo and behold, Chef Charles is sitting there doing exactly that.
Right.
You know, it's right. Like feeding the hungry and feeding the disenfranchised is just such a primal thing, such a primal act of service. And they don't call it the food industry. They call it the hospitality industry, because you're serving.
Listen, that makes perfect sense. During Hurricane Katrina, we only had one or two hospitals that were really active in the New Orleans area, and I was tasked with getting water, infant formula, and ice to those hospitals. And let me tell you what, that was not easy to do. You can about imagine. One of the first, ice was not to be had. Walmart couldn't provide it. They could, you know, sell us water at a discount. We could get infant formula at, you know, at a really good rate from Walmart. The ice was a big problem. So you know what I did? I called up all the crawfish farmers in the area, because a lot of them have their own ice making plants. And they brought them online. They made ice, and a lot of them actually delivered for me. So you're right.
I love it.
Yeah, it.
I love it. Brilliant.
I was stunned. I mean, they were just like, tell us how we can help. I went, oh. Yeah, I didn't expect anything at all to happen. And they brought out their generators. Some of them didn't have electricity, and they made it happen.
Wow. That's so cool. Hey, next disaster happens, I'm going to call you.
I have ideas all the time. I don't sleep much.
Yeah,
I really don't. Listen, one of the things that I really wanted to ask both of you about is, at some point in the book, you say that, and I'm trying to paraphrase it because I lost it, but basically, when you're talking about the heart of the cooking, when you're cooking a meal, you don't necessarily have to be a natural cook like I am, that somebody who just absolutely loves to cook and does it well. People who are operating from the web, from recipes, they can still do this too, yes? I mean, you don't have to you don't have to be a chef in the kitchen.
Oh, yeah, and most of us aren't. I mean, most of us aren't experts. Most of us aren't expert writers. We can still write wonderful emails to our friends. Most of us aren't expert chefs, and we can still make wonderful food. I'll tell you where it starts. It starts with eating and tasting. It starts with a love of food.
And smelling.
And yeah, your senses. Where great cooking starts is with the appreciation of food. And so first off, great eating. Great eating is the foundation of great cooking. So it's not necessarily, you know, razzle-dazzle technique, although that's cool. It's not necessarily expensive, accoutrement in your kitchen. It's first and foremost a love of the food, a passion for the food, an appreciation of the food. And then just saying, I want to make that. I want to do that. And then, yeah, recipes, steps, and models, trial and error, however you get there, it starts with that just genuine from your heart, from your gut appreciation.
Yeah, I like
to
add on to that too, because just to step in here, I mean, you're so right. I mean, there's so many foodies out there, and people love and there's so many cooking shows that everybody's got their toe in the water with something, some idea. And I'll give you a perfect example. My brother-in-law, you know, I don't think he's cooked a meal in his life, but, you know, about 5, 6, 7 years ago, he's a computer geek. He's a genius. He's an amazing, brilliant guy. So, you know, his one of his best traits is studying, and he started getting onto a barbecue kick. And then the next thing you know, he went to 6 different barbecue joints, stood in line and studied them, bought all their books. He's a good study. And then I had him here on our vacation, and I'll be darned, you know, he cooked a brisket one night, 18 hours. It was the best briskets I've ever had in my life. And, you know, he's not a chef or a cook or anything, but he had it was because he had the passion in his heart that he wanted to do it, to the micro expertise. And I learned from him that day, you know. So, it's all about the heart, yeah.
Yeah, Larry Winkett did the same thing, didn't he, John? He started following some barbecue guru around, and now he's an expert himself. I mean, he talks about it all the time on Facebook.
Not a man you would immediately think of as being likely
no.
for makeup.
No, you would not. I did something similar. I don't eat at restaurants very often. I typically find that my cooking is better, to be honest. But I was at Chili's with a friend, and I had their chicken enchilada soup, and I really enjoyed it. I came home, and I looked it up, and I tried to find, you know, some hacks. I like mine better. Make it all the time. So.
You know, our book isn't really about cooking. It's really about life. That said,
right.
We've had a lot of advanced readers who read early versions of the book, and they all come back and say, you know, this and that about the story and the boy and the love and the loss and the learning and the life and the growing. And they all say, and I've become such a much better cook. And that's so cool to hear. We want people
right.
to come away from reading this book at any level of expertise, no matter how elevated or primary they are, basic they are, come away from that book feeling a new level of confidence in what they can do in the kitchen, what they can do with food. And they will. We've seen it happen.
Oh, no doubt. And truly, what you do in the kitchen, what you share with family, what you share with friends, what you share with yourself. I mean, when you can bring a moment of true pleasure, when that, you know, fork hits your tongue and you go, oh, my God. And you take that moment to savor and thank your gods or whoever, you know, blessing for the food. I'm telling you, that's a moment, and you can be all by yourself.
Yes, it's very true. Yep, for 100 or for one.
Exactly. John, thank you so much for being with me here today. Where can people find you on the web? Do you know we're out of time? I told you this is the quickest hour on the web.
It's easy. Online, it's my name, www.johndavidmann.com, and it's all there.
Excellent. Okay, guys, where can people find this book? Because I really want people to read this book. I don't typically get too excited about a book I haven't yet read for obvious reasons, but I know you, and I've read so much about this book that I can't wait.
It's at Amazon, hardcover, ebook, audiobook. It's all there on Amazon. It launches October 17. You can pre-order. And if you want to see the pre-order bonus offer that we're offering people who buy ahead of time, that is at theingredientsofgreatness.com.
Excellent. John, thank you. Chef Charles, thank you so much. It has been a pleasure and an honor speaking with you both today. And I really look forward for you coming back in the new year and talking about your new TV show, because I think that's going to happen too.
Well, we'll wait and see. But thank you so much. The pleasure's all mine.
Thank you. Well, listen, this for our audience, this went way fast, but I really want you to listen to the entire thing and then go look for the book. And I thank you both for all the wonderful, really information, tips, and advice that you've shared with our audience. And be sure to look for us in iTunes. Just look for Your Partner in Success Radio and take us along on your success journey. Gentlemen, thank you again.
Thank you, Denise.
You can find Denise Griffiths at yourofficeonthewebcom or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on Your Partner in Success Radio.